Welcome to another edition of the BDA's Bonding Time DC Update Podcast. I'm Brett Bolton. Today we're pleased to have Mr. John Godfrey of the American Public Power Association. So John, welcome to the podcast. I'm sure in your realm, you've definitely heard of the importance of this event. So we are pleased to have you on today, and I'm really looking forward to talking about bonds, legislation, and generally what's going on in DC.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. So let's kick it off. As we've discussed prior to hopping on here, I know that the BDA's listeners are familiar with public power as an issuer, but if you don't mind giving a brief rundown who your association represents here in DC, and maybe after that, just kind of what are your legislative priorities at APPA for the remainder of 2021?
Sure. So I appreciate that. I will tell you, I think it's worth doing just because you're probably familiar with some of my members, but a lot of my members you may not know. So we represent 2,000 public power utilities operating throughout the U.S. We're in every state except Hawaii, every territory, not the District of Columbia. A lot of them are huge. Los Angeles, San Antonio, Austin, Seattle, the vast majority are teeny. So 1,300 of our utilities have 10 or fewer employees. They are not big issuers of bonds. They obviously occasionally go out in the market, but there are a lot of our folks. But yeah, obviously, most of the activity is those larger utilities. So that's who we are, who we represent. We provide federal advocacy. I focus on financial issues. We don't get into state and local advocacy. Talking about advocacy, you know, we've got a host of issues that we're considering on the regulatory side, on the environmental side, that sort of stuff. I don't focus on that, so I'll not discuss it, so I don't get over my ski tips on that. But I will talk about one of our top priorities really is bond modernization. We've talked about this in the context of tax reform. Now we're talking about in the context of infrastructure. That includes reinstating the ability to issue tax-exempt advanced refunding bonds, increasing the small issue exception to $30 million, maybe doing some amendments to private use rules. There's a lot of oddly prescriptive or proscriptive rules relating to electric utilities that don't apply to other sectors that could be amended. Some provisions having to do with the acquisition of existing facilities that are having some weird effects in the renewable space. These are facilities that, you know, the current owner wants to get rid of, but we're hindered from using tax and financing to purchase. And finally, we're obviously tracking the discussion about the recreation of direct payment bonds, would have been called the Build America bonds and have a couple different names in other bills. So that's kind of what we're focusing on the financial side.
Excellent, John. Hey, thanks for that rundown. I know that your organization, as well as the BDA, are both advocating pretty heavily for legislation such as the LIFT Act, as well through your work with the Public Finance Network. For the listeners, that's a coalition of state and local groups, along with a few groups such as the BDA, working to push like-minded legislation such as the LIFT Act that would reinstate advance refunding, which happens to be our top priority. As John mentioned, expand BQ debt, among several other provisions, including the creation of a new direct pay bond program, the American Infrastructure Bond. So I guess, John, building off the discussion of the LIFT Act, we, as it stands currently, like where this bill stands with Ways and Means. We feel very comfortable with Ways and Means Chairman in the House, Richard Neal, former mayor of Springfield, Massachusetts. Is that your read as well? I know, again, that your organization is advocating hard for promotion of legislation such as this. What are we missing here? I guess, what are the next steps? I know Speaker Pelosi is preaching a July timeframe for passage of the House for the initial infrastructure draft. Is that what you're still hearing? Are things still on track?
Well, so I think just going back to the top of that, I think we're in a very good position in having Terry Sewell, member of the Ways and Means Committee, former bond lawyer, offer this sort of this trifecta bill of advanced refunding, small issue exception, and direct payment bonds is great. There may be a little heartburn in there with the inclusion of Davis-Bacon requirements for the direct payment bond provisions. You've seen, though, companion legislation introduced by Senators Roger Wicker, Michael Bennett, in the Senate. That's bipartisan support in the Senate. That's just a fantastic development. And that's both advanced refunding and direct payment bonds. And I think we're expecting and hoping soon to see a bill introduced in the Senate having to do with small issuer exception. Those are all great developments. And I think they bode well. The fact that Richie Neal, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, introduced a couple of these bills himself previously. This is the opposite of the old POGO thing. We have met the enemy and they are us, right? We have, you know, the chairman is the bill sponsor. That's a pretty good position to be in. There is some concern as to how this advances. We've got Minority Leader McConnell saying that not a single Republican will vote for an infrastructure bill. That means that you won't get 60 votes needed to overcome a filibuster, which means you may have to advance infrastructure legislation through the reconciliation process, which can pass with a simple majority. That gets a little more complicated for infrastructure legislation because there's a lot of authorizing provisions in an infrastructure bill, which would not pass muster under the current restrictions of reconciliation. Likewise, I don't know, and I think there's a lot of discussion about the real limit to a reconciliation is the whole thing has got to be contained within a 10-year budget window. And there's rules about what can or cannot be outside that 10-year budget window. So it seems it may be difficult to fit a 30-year bond provision into a 10-year budget window. No, it may not be. It may be that they can net that against other provisions and the parliamentarians say, no problem, you're good to go. But it's definitely a hurdle and something to think about. And so very much of the infrastructure bill really uses bonds as the keystone for it. That includes just traditional state and local finance, but also I think there's an interest in using bonds to finance privatization or public-private partnerships, depending on where you are in the political spectrum and your view of those things. But I think there's a real interest in using bonds for a couple different things. I mean, a couple bills out there. Congressman Blumenauer has got the Renew Buildings Act, which would use private activity bonds for state and local buildings, schools, courthouses, that sort of stuff. You've also got provisions specifically intended to incentivize the renewal and reconstruction of schoolhouses, again, relying on private activity bonds or tax credit bonds, that sort of stuff. So I think there's a real interest in using bonds for infrastructure. It just may be hard to get that in the vehicle that's available.
We hosted Chairman Neal a few weeks back, and he reiterated his stance that, yes, bonds will be the cornerstone of any bill he passed, which is reassuring. But then we also tried to really get him cornered on the 10-year budget window. You answered that a little bit, the 10-year budget reconciliation window. Have you received a straight answer on that? Is there a plan, or are we just all kind of guessing at this state?
There are lots of very smart people in the world. We all, your callers included, sort of fourth standard deviation, obscure levels of knowledge, right? I mean, being bond financing is pretty deeply down into the weeds. The ins and outs and specifics of the Byrd rule as far as reconciliation is one or two more standard deviations further. So there probably is an answer. And I have not heard, though, definitively one or the other. I've gotten patronizing responses in response to my question, but not a definitive answer.
Yeah, no, that's a fair assessment. But, you know, as I did mention at the top of that question, we do have a good friend, several good friends, at least on the House side as well as the Senate side, who know a lot more than you and I about the parliamentarian rules. So I feel somewhat confident.
Well, and I will say we've got, you know, so you've got the chairman of the committee. You've got Senator Ron Wyden, who's very engaged in this issue. You also have Bill Douster, who came back to the Hill, a longtime budget person. He literally wrote the book on budget law for the Senate. It's a 700, 800 page tome. He's working for Budget Committee Chairman Sanders right now. They've got the guns to get this done if they want to.
Some light reading this evening before bed. The budget book. Before we hop into a couple other legislative issues, I guess I want to get your take. I know the president and the administration hosted a bipartisan group of senators and I believe members of the House a few weeks back, all former mayors and governors, to talk about infrastructure. At the administration level, they're still touting bipartisanship. But in the House and the Senate, the Republican counteroffer was pretty much laughed off the table as soon as it was leaked or submitted or however we want to say it. Do you think budget reconciliation, 50 plus one vote in the Senate, is that the almost foregone conclusion at this point?
I think so. I mean, I think with the American Rescue Plan, I guess there's a bit of a stem under response. But, you know, the Biden administration had two ways to approach their new administration based upon their experience with the Obama administration. And that was double down on trying to really, we didn't try hard enough to negotiate, or to heck with it, we're going. And they've gone with to heck with it, we're going. And yeah. You saw the American Rescue Plan, and I don't see why they would now pivot to lingering negotiations. I think they're keenly aware that they have 22 months, you know, of time to get stuff done. and that's it. And there's a substantial chance they're going to lose control of the Senate and the House. And so this is it. They're not going to throw away their shot. And I think they're going to just run with what they've got.
I think you're right. And looking back, I assume President Biden felt burned by sequestration, topic of the day, and several other issues that happened post Great Recession. And all the congressional leadership on the Democratic side is exactly the same as it was back then. So, yeah, I think you're right. Go big or go home. And that seems to be the route taken this year. So you just mentioned Senator Wyden. I know that he has several pieces of legislation that might be of higher interest at this point to your members, dealing with tax credits being replaced with direct pay type green bonds. If you don't mind expanding a little bit on that, as I know our members will be very interested as well.
Sure. So just by a quick way of background, we have all these tax credits. There's lots of ways the federal government incentivizes energy, but taxes is really it. They do about $15 billion a year in energy tax credits. The wind production tax credit and the solar investment tax credit are the primary ones. Currently, right, we're tax exempt entities. We cannot qualify for these. We don't get them as utilities. But this is true of any governmental entity. And so Senator Wyden would, as part of his plan to sort of rationalize these tax credit regime into a tech neutral bill, as part of that, he would reinstate the ability to issue tax credit and direct payment energy bonds. Basically, rather than getting a tax credit for an investment, or rather than getting a production tax credit, you would get a credit equal to 70% of your interest expense for taxable direct pay or tax credit bond. That's the same sort of generosity or the same mechanism as the clean renewable energy bond of past, but the real improvement here is that there's no volume limit. And that was a real hurdle in that IRS, one, had to oversee the allocation. Two, there was never nearly enough allocation. They were massively oversubscribed the last time around, and this would really kind of take the lid off of that. So it's a good approach. I will tell you, the Green Act has sort of superseded this. This is the House bill. The Ways and Means Committee Democrats have sponsored. We've seen both the Wyden Clean Energy for America Act and the Green Act in the 116th Congress. Both have been reintroduced in the 117th Congress. The Green Act takes a different approach, and it says we're not going to do any bonding provisions in this. What we're going to do is we're going to allow direct payment of tax credits. So insofar as you do not have enough tax liability to take advantage of tax credits, we will deem you to have made a payment of tax equal to that tax credit. There's a 15% haircut to the tax credit, but it's roughly that. That's a simple explanation. So that means that anybody, and that's not just utilities, but all governmental entities. So, you know, the city of Springfield, which doesn't have a utility, but does have a city building, says we want to build solar panels on a rooftop, they can get the credit. Habitat for Humanity, say it wants to build a development block, can put a solar farm, you know, in the corner of that block and get the tax credit. Now, this also helps corporations, merchant power generators, investor-owned utilities, those folks who post-Tax Reform Act of 2017 have seen their marginal tax rates decline. I mean, as you're probably aware, your members are probably aware, the appetite for tax equity has really fallen to the floor. And this would allow any entity, again, even a corporation with little to no tax liability, could take advantage of this provision. So I think there's kind of universal interest in this direct payment idea. I won't say that there's universal agreement that everyone should get it. There's the only thing more likely than people wanting dessert is people perhaps not wanting other people to get dessert. So I think everybody's interested in getting this stuff. I think there's a high likelihood of it being in a bill, if there is an energy bill. For example, the Wyden bill includes this. He just doesn't include state and local governments. So corporations could get direct payment under the Wyden bill. We would get the bond approach under his version. The House bill, again, is everybody.
Is this something you foresee getting wrapped into the broader Build Back Better plan, the $2+ trillion infrastructure, or would this be a separate package?
No, I think it could go either way. Again, reconciliation, we've talked about earlier. I think anything would have to go as part of that. Any single senator, right, could effectively kill that. You've got one Democrat who votes against it, game over. And so I think there is a possibility that if a broader infrastructure bill is not done, you might do a more narrow energy bill, and something like this could be included. And I failed to mention earlier, I think part of the reason this direct payment issue is of interest on this call is in contrast, you know, to a for-profit company that's going to do debt and equity financing of these things, we're still going to be using bonds. Right. Maybe not for a five-year project, maybe not for a $2 million project, but, you know, a 10-year battery storage project, it would not be bad to finance that over time. A 20-year wind farm, again, it'd be good to do, you know, sort of overtime financing. And so I think direct payment may not be a bond provision, but it is a bond provision. I mean, how else are you going to finance it? It will be in taxable bonds probably, but I think that will drive volume on the municipal market side if that gets enacted.
Excellent. That's a very helpful rundown. So let's put a bow on this episode. I like to put everybody on the spot, John.
That's dangerous.
You're a betting man, and let's just focus on, say, the LIFT Act, right? The three main provisions, right? Advancer fundings, the direct pay, American infrastructure bonds, and the small issuer provision. Does this pass this year? There's a lot of talk for the two. We'll focus on the $2+ trillion infrastructure discussion that Biden is leading currently. Assuming these are included in that, do we think this passes in 2021, or is this going to get punted to 2022 or beyond?
Well, so if the premise is that there's going to be an infrastructure bill, guaranteed those are in it. I'm overstating it, but 95%.
What if there's no massive infrastructure bill, John?
Yeah, I think it's very tough. Without if you don't have a massive infrastructure bill, I think it is tough to get those to advance. And maybe not. Maybe there may be, again, if you don't have a big bill, it may be, again, we talked about that 20-month period that the president has, months 15, 16, 17, 18, they don't have the big thing. Well, let's, you know, again, football, you can't get a touchdown. Let's go for the field goal. They say, okay, we can't get the big ones, but we do have bipartisan support for these other small iterative things. And there is bipartisan support for this stuff. And so you could see those advancing, possibly.
To stick with the football analogy, that would be a Hail Mary for us, right? So that'd be beautiful.
Well, yeah. I think from an advocacy standpoint, there's a lot of different vehicles this could ride on. And making the case vocally and aggressively right now is the approach to take. And again, it may be, you know, you don't want to plan for something that's going to happen next December. So I think the approach that we are taking right now, which is all of us pushing pretty hard right now for as much as we can get right now, is the right approach.
All right, John. Well, thanks for joining me today. Again, John Godfrey from the APPA. We really appreciate having you on and your perspective. So thanks, John.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you having me on.